anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course, would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course, we want to play at the weekend.
And you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. It's Joe here. Nathan Murphy alongside me. Hello.
Hello.
Peter Lowry is going to join us very soon to rejoice in the fact that he promised us Francesco Molinari. You don't need to worry about him. I know he's the foreign player in the year right now. Link's not his thing, though, really.
No. Once the little bit of sand there, the burnt out like crispiness, not for him.
Wouldn't go near Francesco Molinari, said Peter.
Above
Lowry.
Anybody that I would. Avoid right now.
Yeah. To be fair, he did predict, along with some other people, but I mean, this was on the Wednesday. He said Tiger Woods, he thought Tiger Woods would win or certainly go very close. So that one was no...
He was right on that.
It was no nothing talk, but Francesco Molinari looms large.
It was a bad weekend for Peter, let's be honest. From Francesco Molinari, from Jordan Spieth on Saturday night. He had a sleepless night on Saturday night as Jordan Spieth closed in on his fourth major title. Yeah. Was he ultimately proven right on Jordan Spieth?
That's an interesting question. I feel no. I feel he had discounted Spieth being a player at all in this conversation. And okay, look, Spieth blew up quite spectacularly. But I mean, that doesn't make him an average player. Like, he was there again. What he did on Saturday. I can't even... What was the best day? Was it Saturday or was it Sunday?
No, Sunday for the couple of hours where we had Tiger Woods leading on his own, yeah. Jordan Spieth leading on his own, Rory McIlroy tied for the lead.
Okay.
That's the dream.
But Saturday was exquisitely good as well.
Well, from... The second Spieth drove the green at the first.
Yes.
It was, whoa.
I was at my goddaughter's first birthday party.
Well, that's a lot of responsibility for you, Joe.
So we were all there, lots of kids running around. Ugh. Do you not like kids?
No, I do. It reminds me of my Sunday, Joe.
Oh, okay.
As I was sitting feet up on the couch, lots of kids running around.
Okay.
I'm like, do not realise what's happening here.
But it was quite nice to retire to the TV room where the golf was on. Took little Fia with me and we were watching the golf for a while. So I was being a good godfather and watching every single shot of the golf for 5 hours.
Brilliant.
And I have to say, I thought Saturday was just so good. I watched every shot Thursday, Friday as well. I mean, I was right across this Open. I thought it was just brilliant. I do think it's because the R&A just don't mess with things too much, you know. They've set up... So we were chatting last night in the show. We were saying this was an unbelievable Open. Last year with the Spieth Kuchar stuff, that was an unbelievable Open. Year before that was the Mickelson-Stenson duel. That was an unbelievable Open. 14 was good.
Like but 15 was Spieth missed out in the playoff, but was on course to win three in a row.
The excitement that Sunday was off the charts.
Monday,
Paul Dunne, wow. And then obviously Rory in 14, that was good. It wasn't amazing.
It was great because it was Rory.
Yeah. So, and everybody's into Rory. Found a really good winner at Hoylake. And Ricky Fowler pushed him for a while. 13 was Philip Muirfield. Unbelievable. I was at that one. It was unbelievable. 12 was Adam Scott blowing up with Ernie Els. Mm. A really great Sunday. 11 was Darren Clark. And then 10 was Louis Westhuizen, which admittedly was boring.
Bad.
Yeah, no, not so good. But that's a good run of really good Opens, no?
That is. And we went even further back, Joe. 09 was Tom Watson's collapse to Stuart Sink winning.
Yeah, amazing.
08 and 07 were Harrington. 06 and 05 were Tiger.
So you get that.
Now I'm struggling in 04.
That's an unbelievable run. And yet, when's the last like brilliant US Open across 2-3 days? Like this year was kind of rubbernecking on
US
a car
Open
crash.
Have been just that.
Yeah.
They've been entertaining because of the controversy.
Yeah, wrong reasons. Oakmont with the Lowry screw up in 2016. Chambers Bay, I kind of enjoyed it, but it was a bit of a... It didn't seem to win approval generally.
No, the course gets too much attention. Whereas the R&A could have panicked. We are in an unseasonably warm summer.
Yeah.
The courses don't look like that.
Yeah.
They could have thought, all right, the winning score here could be 20 under par. Let's make the greens 14 on the stimp.
Yeah.
It's the only way we can protect the sanctity of par.
Yeah.
But they just thought, let's play the course as it is naturally lying right now.
Yeah, completely. And okay, a few tricky pin positions and away they go. And they still have a very respectable winning score. Like it's not like it was 25 under. So some tweets then. We'll bring you some Francesco Molinari thoughts and some Tiger Woods. About 5 minutes of his press conference. Pretty interesting. So Owen Small says, looking forward to the pod, as I know us true Golf Weekly fans were disgusted. That's disgusted. There wasn't more talk about the Open on Monday evening. Hashtag friend of the pod. We had Jay Townsend on for the first 25 minutes of the show. It was the half seven piece, and that's still not enough for these people.
Wow. What was Jay saying?
Can't remember.
Really good stuff, though. Maybe that was his point.
Wouldn't miss it, though.
Wow.
I've listened to so much post-open talk, I can't even differentiate anymore.
Yeah, there's been a lot of podcasts.
Yeah. Have you noticed that? Golf podcasts now are everywhere.
Well, there's an awful lot of golf podcasts, but the more I listen to them, the more I realise that the criticism of our podcast has been overly harsh.
Right.
None of these podcasts turn up every week.
Oh, that's true, actually. I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's true.
Because what I find is, so I listen to this spell of three or four pre-open, post-open, and then most of them won't do anything again until the USPGA.
It's true.
Yet we're the only ones getting stick.
We're the only one with Golf Weekly in the title.
Granted. But still, a lot of these people are full-time people working in golf.
Yeah. Christopher Bulger. Round of golf followed by food at Carlo Golf Club. You guys won't be disappointed when you're down. Over to you, Nathan.
Yes, Joe. It is a Golf Weekly outing.
That sounds like a tweet I made up for the purpose.
No,
of...
I saw that. I thought this is what Joe is going to do.
Perfect.
He's going to use this as the link to talk about our Golf Weekly
We're
golf
so
day.
In tune, Nathan.
Which is taking place in under 2 weeks' time on Wednesday, the 8th of August, Joe. It is the day before the final major of the year, the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
We're going to Carlo Golf Club. We are going to bring 50 Golf Weekly listeners. Well, 25 and a mate. But bring a mate who listens to Golf Weekly.
Yeah.
Or do the good thing that so many of our listeners do and say, I'll come by myself.
I love those people.
So.
Admittedly, I don't like talking to them when they're there because they really latch onto you because they don't know anyone. But I respect them.
Well, you've been that guy. Were you that guy in St. Anne's at the weekend?
Oh, great round in St. Anne's. Donal, Mags, and it's either Michael or John. Ironically, because I talked to Michael or John, whichever one it was the most. Great fella. Great round in St. Anne's.
Really, really good guy, Michael or John.
He was. 34 points. Was happy. It was there for me. Played Castle Knock with a 9 handicapper. Jamie was her name. She was only 17.
Right.
Played off 9. Just the two of us. She was brilliant. Great day.
I love Castle Knock.
I had 35 points there. 40 points at Kilcock. 34 points at Lucan. I'm playing golf 2 times a week in competition at the moment. I'm playing St. Anne's tomorrow.
Great. You're also going to be playing. You're also going to be playing in Carlo Golf Club, Joe.
Yeah.
On August 8th.
8th of August.
So that is Wednesday week, the day before the PGA.
You've said that already.
I'm just re-emphasising the point, and we're going to bring 50 of our listeners.
No, I know that.
And that's all I've got.
For a mate who
so Damien McGrain is the pro down there. He has invited us down. We're very grateful because we've heard rave reviews of Carlo Golf Club.
Can you get to the point here? How do we choose who we're bringing?
So you simply just tweet us to Ask Golf Weekly, and I will get at Carlo Golf Club 1, which is their Twitter account.
At Carlo Golf Club 1.
Yes.
Okay.
And just tweet us and them your name, and we'll pick out the winners, and we will DM them over the next little while. We've got a great day, so we're going to tee off early in the morning. It's a 9 o'clock start. It's on a Wednesday. 9 o'clock shotgun start.
Fucking Carlo. Do I get an overnight on the Tuesday?
I presume so. Have you got a hotel down there you can put us up in? Otherwise, Malloy ain't travelling. So we'll be there good and early.
Yeah.
Then we're going to record a podcast afterwards, a PGA Championship preview.
Okay, get it out straight away.
With Damien McGrain and with Peter Laurie, who I presume is coming.
Yeah.
We will confirm that.
Yeah.
And we'll do that. And there'll be lunch provided.
Nice.
That's going to be a really good day. We'll get some prizes organised.
How much does this cost the listeners?
Not a single penny, Joe.
Oh, dear.
That is the type of podcast. All these, I haven't heard any other podcast
competitive
doing
price,
this type of thing.
That's good.
None of them.
Okay, very good.
So we're really excited about this. Carlo Golf Club, yeah.
So tweet
every
us quickly.
Review I've seen is this place is worth a visit.
Really? Okay, great. So if this is on the 8th, which is in 2 weeks' time, I presume people want to get this done pretty quickly.
We want to get it in. We'll pick people this week and next week. So.
Okay, grand. Okay, great. Do that. Emmett Keane. That's
Kane.
Emmett of the Keens. Emmett Keane says, waiting for the Golf Weekly OTB open review podcast from Costa Blanca, he says, but not the common part.
Mm. Well, he sent that on Monday. I'd say with his ginger complexion, he may be well burnt if he's just sitting there waiting.
Indoors waiting. What a Sunday, Tiger, Rory, Jordan. Molinari's form was there to be seen. And to be honest, we couldn't have the best open in years won by Xander feckin' Schauffele. Hashtag friend of the pod. Bit of a downer that Molinari won it. As chuffed for him as I am. I've heard some people say, what's great for European golf? Who cares about Europe? Like, really?
We only care about European golf for 3 days every 2 years.
Monty says this is going to be the strongest European Ryder Cup team in the history of the sport.
But the US are also saying this is going to be the strongest American team
But that could be true as well. So actually,
so it could be the greatest Ryder Cup in the history of the sport.
Well, that's the conclusion.
Is it the strongest? I'll wait and see. I'm looking at the American
The rookies are off the charts.
I'm looking at the potential American picks. He's going to have to pick Tiger.
What about Phil?
He'll have to pick Phil.
How many picks? Four.
Four. And then you're into DeChambeau, possibly. He's just outside. He's ninth, so he probably gets in. Maybe Matt Kuchar ahead of Schauffele. Kuch, great inside the dressing room.
Yeah.
Got to get in.
Yeah, mates would feel. Con Finnegan, since when did Golf Weekly OTP pod go live and mainstream? On a Wednesday evening? At Malloy Joe, at Nathan Murph, going behind the back of Fionn Davenport, hashtag friend of the pod. We weren't, we were on the radio. And
we had time to fill. Let's be brutally honest here.
Sheelan Strain, just after seeing Sky don't have the PGA again this year, need at Golf Weekly OTB to run supplementary coverage along the undoubted shite that we're going to get from at 11 Sports HQ. I love that you tweeted them, just to make it bearable. Yeah, so...
Wow.
What's that?
Sorry, I was on the Carlo Golf Club page. This is sort of dramatic music.
That's the team music.
This is fabulous aerial view of Carlo Golf Club.
Ah, stop now. Come on, we're on the air.
Wow. Wow.
Does look nice.
Does look nice. That is dramatic.
So people may not be aware that they're not going to get to see the PGA Championship.
I don't think people are going to be aware until they sit down on the Thursday evening and realise it's not on Sky, because I actually thought I had heard Sky promoing their coverage of it.
Yeah.
But they were obviously just saying, it's on, it's happening.
Yeah.
They did lose it last year as well. We had the BBC coverage where anybody outside the world's top 10 was somebody we'd never heard of.
And it was on Facebook Live last year, but apparently not as much as going to be on Facebook Live this time, which is just a bloody nuisance. I think the deal, 11 Sports...
are really, really great up-and-coming broadcaster.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to find staff to present this thing. You need people who know what they're talking about. Young-ish.
Are they listening to The Cut as well? If you're tweeting 11 Sport, at least tweet something nice about us.
Yeah, tweet 11
Sport. Can't believe these guys aren't on mainstream golf TV.
Can't believe at Malloy Joe's not presenting that kind of stuff.
Well.
Anyway, look, here's the more important situation. So what I've seen they're going to do is Thursday and Friday rounds free to air. But then I think if you want to get the weekend rounds, that's not free to air. So you may have to apply for a free month trial.
Okay, and then you have to send them an email to cancel that with 30 days notice.
Probably, and stop sending me future correspondence. I don't know. Look, it's a pity. This is really bad for the game. This should not be behind a paywall. I don't think the Open should be behind the Sky Sports paywall either. But this shouldn't be behind a paywall, a channel that not many people have, frankly.
No, and that an awful lot of people won't even be able to access, because I'm not sure what the story is for our English listeners or American listeners. Maybe your broadband is very good throughout the country. There's an awful lot of people who listen, who I know from down in Mayo, if you're trying to stream a live broadcast continuously for 5 or 6 hours, it's simply not possible.
Really? Okay.
The broadband coverage isn't good enough. Okay. And also, part of the enjoyment of golf...
Yes.
Is sitting on the couch with your nice big HD Sky Sports coverage.
Totally.
We've become used to that standard. We don't know all the details yet as to who's going to provide the coverage. Are they just going to take the American stream? Have they got some plans in place where they're going to recruit staff from the BBC or Sky or other up-and-coming sports broadcasters that they could employ? But I'm not sure in my house, even though I have one of those smart TVs, can I go on YouTube and would it be HD quality or would it be a little bit fuzzy
or would it be
perfect? Like Jordan Spieth could win the career Grand Slam.
Yeah.
And maximum, I would say, in Ireland, 20,000 people are going to watch it.
Yeah.
Maximum.
Shocking, really. Yeah. Really bad decision. They have to sort that out.
But golf
year.
Is one of those sports that, except for the people who listen to a golf podcast, most... your average person doesn't go searching for it.
Mm.
They sort of stumble upon it. They're looking for some entertainment on a Sunday night, and it's there.
Mm.
And if there's names they recognise, they'll switch it on and they'll stick with it. But they're not going to spend 2 hours downloading an app and then having to register, give over your credit card details.
Yeah. And by the time they realise they have to do that, I think it'll be almost bloody over anyway. Alistair McGarrity sent us a tweet that somebody else had the pictures of the 06 Masters where Francesco was caddying for his brother against Tiger and Stevie Williams.
Yes, brilliant.
It's just unbelievable.
I used to think Eduardo was going to be the Molinari.
That was the received wisdom, all right, yeah. Geez, Francesco's really turned his career around. Len Dowling, we'll ask Peter Laurie about him. He's played with Molinari a few times. Len Dowling says, although Tiger faded, he says you have to think he's responsible for the carnage at the top of the leaderboard. I guess Tiger Woods' name must have had some effect. It's not Tiger Woods, though.
No, I was wondering if it had an effect on Spieth. So not McIlroy, because McIlroy just never got going.
Yeah, he was six behind, really, when Woods was pushing.
And his game wasn't in a position where it looked as though he was able to put on pressure and rack up enough birdies quickly enough. But maybe Spieth looked at that leaderboard on the sixth hole when Tiger was a few... So that was around the time Tiger was starting to move to the top. In fact, it was at that moment, just a few minutes before, and Tiger gone top of the leaderboard. Was there something in Spieth that thought he had to pull out a moment?
Yeah, I wonder.
That instead of just doing the sensible layup, he thought, all right, everybody sees Tiger's coming. This is the moment they've spoken about. Yeah. And everyone said, how will we respond? And I responded with the wood from the rough.
Yeah.
And it was one of the greatest shots of all time.
Yeah, this was like Birkdale Part 2. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. That's an interesting one.
Or maybe he never even knew and he just took a terrible shot.
Yeah, that's possible too. Brian Haggerty painted my house all day Saturday to leave me free for Sunday to watch the Open. But I thought I'd miss the best day. But that was one of the best final days of a major I've seen in a long time. My son Luke and I were glued to the TV for 6 hours. Hashtag a classic. It really was just brilliant. Colin Kilroy was at the tournament. He tweeted a picture for us just on the 15th tee. Tiger's after sinking a birdie on 14. I'm waiting for him to arrive. The excitement. Barry Cullen then. Folks, the lack of Kerry GAA jerseys at the Open has been shocking, which is a fair point. Anthony O'Connell said, Eddie Pepperell's preparation. I won't lie, I had too much to drink last night. Hangover and munchies going to kill him. Hashtag the Open. Munchies. Eddie Pepperell is fairly laid back kind of character, isn't he? Kieran says, he said this on the day, emergency pod tonight if Tiger wins. Would we have had to do one? Would we have had to drive in to do one? I mean, I felt like I was ready to go out drinking on Sunday night.
Yeah, I was pretty excited.
So Jason O'Brien then, if Spieth wins, this was on July 21st, is Peter allowed back on the pod? Hashtag average. Hashtag no chance. Colin Casey says he's already buzzing, this was on July 21st, for the Golf Weekly British Open review, and it's not even finished yet. It's been an unbelievable week so far. He's at the course as well, Colin Casey. Looks very good. Tygo Rodig, finally, lads, you need to discuss why Sky Sports Golf have the Open behind the paywall. Ignoring that Sky can do no wrong in your eyes, that's definitely not true. Like, Mark Rowe gets way too much criticism on this pod.
I think you'll find Mark Rowe coach to major winning Open champion.
That's Dennis Pugh.
Both of them.
What does Mark Rowe do?
Dennis Pugh is his
short game.
Short game. And Mark Rowe is one of his coaches as well.
How many does he bloody have?
A lot. So he's Phil Kenyon.
Yeah.
Mark Rowe.
Yeah. Dave Allred.
Dave Allred.
Dennis Pugh.
He's got a big team.
Jesus. Who does Rory have? Michael Bannon.
Streamlined.
Anyway, ignoring that Sky can do no wrong in your eyes, says Tyke. Ignoring the fact that that's not true. Surely the Open can be on Sky One for the week. Unlike the tennis and the World Cup last week, the average sports fan is oblivious to the golf. Hashtag grow the game. I don't think that's Sky's responsibility, I think they paid lots of money for the Open. They're entitled to put it behind the paywall. It's one of the reasons we all pay our Sky subscription. They'd be fairly foolish to put their best events on Sky One. It's an issue for the RNA. It's an issue for the game. And I think in that respect, it's a good point. It should be on TV. The highlights package on BBC is very good, actually. Really good.
I think that ship has sailed. For sport in general,
yeah.
And particularly for golf. Unfortunately, the problem golf now has is suddenly, while we've been talking about 11 sports, suddenly Sky seems like the mainstream accessibility.
Yeah, I know. Malky Clerken had a very good piece in the Irish Times this week about how much it would cost you to pay for, say, the new version channel, Sky Sports, Air Sports and the BT package. He reckons you're looking at, if you just want that in Ireland, to get all the sports you need to watch, the mainstream sports, added it all up, and you're looking at a tasty $1,300 a year.
Easy.
Yeah.
And that's if it's even technically possible to have
all that stuff, yeah.
All those different options.
Let's. We're going to get to Peter Lawrie in a second. Next up, though, we'll hear from Francesco Molinari and Tiger Woods. So first off, here's our champion, Francesco Molinari, 70 on Thursday, 72 on Friday. And then he went bogey-free all the way in, 65 on Saturday, 69 on Sunday, and, well, he was very happy.
Can you sum up how you're feeling right now?
Just disbelief, to be honest. It's amazing to stand here with the Claret Jug. I knew I was coming in with some good golf. My record around here was terrible, so that didn't make me too optimistic about the week, but I just tried to not think about it and focus on hitting good shots day by day. To go the weekend bogey-free, it's unthinkable, to be honest. So very proud of today, very proud of, obviously, playing with Tiger was another challenge because of the crowds and everything, but I felt really good this morning when I came here. I felt like I was ready for the challenge. Obviously conscious that it could have gone either way, but I knew I was gonna do my best today.
Well, great. We'll take questions from the floor. If you can raise a hand, we'll get a microphone to you. We'll start here at the front.
Complimenti, Francesco. Tu sei il regio per molti festi oggi in Italia. I have a question. When you were in that room, you buried your head in your face, and it looked like maybe you wept. What were you thinking?
I couldn't watch Xander play the last two holes, to be honest. So that's why I went to the putting green, because I probably would have felt sick watching on TV. And so big credits to my wife that watches me all the time. I don't know how she does it. I couldn't do it. It's just disbelief, like I said. It's, you know, to look at the names on that Claret Jug, obviously. What can you say? It's the best golfers in history, and to be on there, it's incredible, you know, from someone like me coming from Italy, not really a major golfing country. It's been an incredible journey.
There we are, so Francesco up to number 6 in the world. And to be fair to him, even he wasn't so sure that Carnoustie would be his bag, and his record wasn't very good. So we'll give Peter Lawrie a semi-pass, but only a semi-pass. Next up then, Tiger Woods. So Tiger Woods ultimately fell away in the end. And it was very exciting for such a long time. That front nine, that first 10 holes in particular, were pretty amazing. But then it did fall away with that double bogey and bogey. So how was Woods feeling when he walked off?
A little ticked off at myself, for sure. I had a chance starting that back nine to do something, and I didn't do it. I thought today, starting out the day, I saw that Jason played a beautiful round early. Brooksy played another solid round today, and I thought that thought nine would be the number. You know, there's three guys at nine. I figured one of the three guys would shoot even par. I know it's tough out there, but I figured I needed to go get that number somehow. And next thing, lo and behold, I'm tied for lead, and then I'm leading it. And that, unfortunately, I hit a bad 3-iron off the tee there at 10. Grass grabbed my shaft again and hit it left, and I made a couple mistakes there on the green. And same thing at 12. The grass grabbed the shaft. This time I turned it open and made bogey there.
Tiger, was there anything you could have done differently or would have done differently?
No. Today I did everything the way that I thought I needed to do it to win the championship. This entire week I felt like I needed to keep building my way into this championship. It's one of those where, as I said early in the week, it's going to be about 10, 12 guys with a chance to win it on Sunday, because we're all driving in the same areas. And it kind of turned out that way. There are a bunch of guys packed, a bunch of guys with a chance to win, and I was one of them.
How much fun was it to be back in the
mix? It was a blast. I was saying earlier that, I need to try and keep it in perspective, because at the beginning of the year, if you would have said you were playing the Open Championship, I would have said, I'd be very lucky to do that. I talked to Serena and I are good friends, and I'm sure she'll probably call me and talk to me about it, because you got to put things in perspective. She just had a baby and lost Wimbledon finals. I used to just keep it in perspective. And the same thing with me. I know that it's going to sting for a little bit here. Given where I was to where I'm at now, blessed.
Tiger, when you had your lead, did it feel familiar?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like old
times? It did. It didn't feel any different. It didn't feel any different to being next to the lead and knowing what I needed to do. I've done it so many different ways. It didn't feel any different. It felt great to be a part of the mix and build my way into the championship. And today was a day that I had a great opportunity.
Yeah, like the first time your kids were totally aware, I'm sure, of what you were doing out there. Describe the scene on the 18th green with them.
I told them I tried, and I said, I hope that you're proud of your pops for trying as hard as I did. And they gave me some. It was pretty emotional, because they gave me some pretty significant hugs there and squeezed, and I know that they know how much this championship means to me and how much it feels good to be back playing again. And to me, it's just so special to have them aware, because I've won a lot of golf tournaments, you know, in my career, but they don't remember any of them. And so for them to understand, you know, what I was doing, you know, early in my career, and they've seen, only thing they've seen are my struggles and the pain I was going through. Now they're just want to go play soccer with me, and so that's, man, it's just such a great feeling.
Spoken about how great the galleries were this week. Unfortunately, there was an incident there on 18. Mm. Is that a case of that being a little too close to play, and did it affect your?
Yeah, I flinched, but I've had things like that happen a lot in my career with, you know, people are just try to time it, either that or they're a little bit overserved. You know, they've tipped back a few and it's late in the day. Unfortunately, that's part of, you know, what we have to deal with, you know, in today's game. People are trying to yell out things to try and, you know, be on TV or be in social media or whatever it may be. That was too close to the game of play.
Thanks, everyone.
Mm. Francesco played. He played really solidly today. I mean, he hit a couple off shots, but what won him, well, if he does win, it was definitely a short game. I mean, he chipped it beautifully. And I know he made a couple putts here and there for pars, but to get it to where it's basically kicking from some of the spots he put himself, that was impressive. Great touch. You could see him actually, you know, try and hit a couple with cut spin, try and hit a couple with draw spin. You know, he was working the ball around the greens, and that was cool to see.
There we are. That's Tiger Woods. Let's talk to Peter Lawrie. Come in, Peter Lawrie.
Come in, Joe. How are you?
Very well. So let's pull this plaster off straight away. You told us Francesco Molinari wasn't much good at links.
I don't know. I'm just, my picks just seem to be, I don't know, arseways these days.
That is the nature of golf. What a fantastic Open. That's what we've just been talking about here.
Absolutely fabulous. Like to see Tiger Woods coming back to where he was. I did call that correctly at the start of the week. I did say Tiger would be in the mix on come Sunday, but would he have the bottle to finish it off? And I got that part right. But Francesco Molinari just blew everybody away, and I'm delighted for him. He's a wonderful guy, and the way he plays golf is just superb.
I do remember Molinari playing well in Baltrae the year Shane Lowry won, so there have been occasions where he has delivered on links. Is it just the case when you look at Molinari then that actually everything you previously thought you have to reset in your head, because what he's done over the last couple of months has been pretty remarkable?
It is. He's changed his game around completely. Like Molinari was always very good striker of the ball, good iron player, not a great short game and a terrible putter. And now he's got a great long game and a great short game, and mixing the two, and he's just unbeatable. It's seen that over the last couple of weeks with his scores. Like he won in Wentworth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He won in America.
Yeah.
And then he came here and won again.
And actually played in the John Deere the week before, which is such a strange way to prepare for the Open. But he needed to actually get the number of tournaments up in the US, so he decided to play in the John Deere and finish second there. When you say a terrible putter, so lots of people have been talking about what his putting was like in the last number of years. What are we talking here? Was he a guy who would often three putt? Did you play with him much? Did you see much of him down the years?
I played with Francesco quite a bit, and his brother Eduardo. Eduardo always seemed to be a more kind of flashy type player. Francesco was very much down the middle, but Francesco suffered a bit like a kind of Ross Fisher. He lagged every putt to the hole. Every putt was kind of a two putt rather than a one putt. But now he seems to give every putt a chance to go in the hole. A lot of his good putts were hitting the back of the hole, and on slowish greens he was brilliant.
Yeah, phenomenal winner. I mean, look, we were saying here, not that anybody has anything against Molinari, but like the excitement, the air went out of the thing when Tiger Woods' challenge fell away. I mean, for the first 10 holes we thought this was quite unbelievable. What's your analysis then of what happened to him on the 11th? I suppose from when he puts that one left of the green and you know, he's got that third shot, which ultimately he chose to chip on. Like, was that a mental error? Was that a crazy shot to go for? Or was it the kind of thing that actually Tiger Woods is allowed to do, given his history in the game?
Do you know what I was amazed at? And you'll probably think this is weird, was when he hit that spectator. Have you ever seen Tiger Woods get a glove out of his bag, sign it and hand it to the spectator?
No.
In the middle of a tournament.
Does he not always do that?
Well, it was.
No,
just
he may not be Phil Mickelson giving $100 as well, but
it was very noticeable. I thought he went over and shook the guy's hand,
and they had a laugh and a joke.
Exactly, yeah. It was like he took himself out of the tournament all of a sudden, and that was his stumbling block. He kind of lost his concentration, then hit a terrible first shot, and then hit an average enough pitch, made double bogey there, and he's out of the tournament. Like the two iron shots that he hit off. 10, 11 and 12 were terrible.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that.
For him.
But so what you're basically saying, Peter, is nice guy Tiger Woods at a crucial moment came to the fore and killed the old Tiger.
He sabotaged himself.
Exactly. He sabotaged himself. and I said at the start of the week, would he have the bottle to continue on, you know what I mean, having been in the lead? And he was like a rabbit in the headlights when he saw he was in the lead.
Do you think so?
Which
totally. It's very. So you think it was a. You think it's no coincidence that when he saw his name solo top of the leaderboard, that his performance dipped. That is not a coincidence in your view.
No, not at all. I think he shocked himself, and he said it afterwards. He said it, that he figured that he had to get to nine.
Yeah.
You know, his goal was to get to nine because he thought with three guys at nine. Not all three of them are going to be, you know, go forward, but one is definitely going to stay where he is. Mm. And you know, he was chasing nine under. When he got to seven, he looked at the leaderboard. Oh my God, I'm in the lead.
Yeah.
What do I do now?
Yeah. There was a point as well. So, I mean, the really shocking thing is, so on 11, not ideal world, but given this under the circumstances, he makes his bogey. It's not a double bogey. He instead of playing that flop shot, he gets it back on the green and he has his run apart, maybe misses it, makes his bogey. But he made double there, and then he compounds it with the error on 12. I saw a few people make the point that, like, on 12, you know, the wind was into him on 12. And, like, maybe if he was just a bit more confident with the driver, given the wind into him, instead of taking out an iron and really trying to play the stinger and really trying to step on it and turn it over and, you know, keep it low and everything, maybe if he just was a bit more confident in the driver, he would have made that hole easier on himself. Like, is that a fair criticism, or do you have any issue with that?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. He once he missed the fairway with a two iron in that hole, he's making bogey.
Yeah.
And he knew that off the tee. You know, the margin for error was decreased dramatically by hitting iron, but also the margin for making a mistake was increased because, as I said to you, missed the fairway there left. He can't get it on the green.
Yeah. Well, I should say it's a 500-yard par four into the wind. That's the key point I should be making here. This isn't a 340-yard par four. It's a 500-yard par four into the wind.
Yeah. And he needed to hit two good, solid two irons into that hole.
Yeah.
Hitting two iron off the tee. But as I said at the start of the week, you know, he needs to play a golf course where he can hit driver but not fear it. And to be fair to him, he did that quite a bit. Mm. He hit his driver pretty decent.
On that front nine then, when he was starting to charge, how did his game compare to, say, where he was 2013 when he was winning multiple tournaments in PGA and compare to when he was at his very best 15, 16 years ago?
I think he was pretty close, wasn't he? You know, and he certainly had an effect on the leaderboard, which I was amazed at.
Yeah.
You know, he had the Tiger factor back. Everybody was going backwards and he was the only one going forwards. Mm. And everybody was scared. Like, you know, you have to admit Justin Jordan Spieth made a massive mistake on the sixth hole, again off the tee, and then a massive mistake second shot. And I don't think he would have made those kind of mistakes if he hadn't seen Tiger on the leaderboard.
Really? But he's so average, Jordan Spieth. Do you not think so?
I totally agree.
That was just his averageness coming to the fore. He couldn't hide it anymore.
I'd say you were a worried man on Saturday night.
He proved his averageness on Sunday.
Oof. I'd say Saturday night you were sitting there thinking, oh no.
Oh, I was just waiting for the Twitter to go mental at me.
Do you now accept that Jordan Spieth is a... is a putter that we just can't, a fabulous player for starters, but we just can't define him as a putter. That he's just, there's something otherworldly about his putting.
There is. There is. His putting is spectacular. If he doesn't have his putter, he's an average golfer.
When you say average, do you still mean a top 50 player in the world, tee to green?
I think he struggles to be top 50 tee to green, to be honest with you.
Wow. But like, look what he did in the Saturday. He drives the green and makes that eagle. Like, that's not an average player. I know it was playing short, but I mean, not many other people manage that.
No, I totally agree with you. But everybody can hit a couple of good shots. I'm not saying that he's like top 100 in the world here, a good player.
Oh dear, breaks my heart.
You guys know my feeling. He does not hit the ball straight enough to be considered to be where you guys consider him. He doesn't. Full stop.
But aren't his?
You guys have him on this elevated platter, and he doesn't hit the ball straight.
But his overall package. Okay, so not just the putting, but the competitiveness, the maturity, the strategist that he is, and that's what the six is so scary. He's amazing at almost every other.
10 out of 10 for strategy and having the ability to take on shots and to create shots and do that. Yeah, absolutely. He's a Seve of old.
Okay.
But Seve never hit the ball straight either.
Mm, okay. It makes his decision on six to hit that wood, his second shot on six, all the more inexplicable. I know you're saying maybe the Tiger effect was part of it, or pressure in some way was a part of it. It's quite surprising to see Spieth fold the way he did. I mean, he doesn't generally do that.
No, he doesn't, no. But that shot on six, I'll just explain it to you because I've been there many times. There's a bunker 250 yards off the tee. You have to carry that. It's 265, 270, and then there's another two bunkers. So either you take it on or hit it up Hogan's Alley, but there's out of bounds left. And then on the right-hand side, you bail out. You might hit a driver, an iron, and bail out. When it plays into the breeze, your second shot, you have to hit it into a kind of 15-yard gap without a bounds left and your hazard on your right-hand side. It's one of the most difficult second shots there is I've ever seen on a par five.
Okay.
And to take a wood out there, like you saw the guy he played with. Who did he play with in the final round?
Schauffele, wasn't it?
Kisner.
What was it?
Was it Schauffele?
Xander Schauffele, I thought.
Schauffele. Yeah. And he hit his tee shot in a similar position, and look what he did. He just chipped it up the fairway because he was so frightened to doing what Jordan did. Or hit it out of bounds. So it was just one of those shots where it was just, I would have to say it was just amazingly, I suppose you could call it stupid in a way, to take on that shot. It was a shot to absolutely nothing.
Should his caddy have been more forceful in that situation?
I certainly would have been telling him to chip it up the fairway and instead of giving yourself, you know, 8 or 9 iron into the green, give yourself 5 iron into the green.
Yeah.
It's one of the most difficult holes in Carnoustie. Those holes along the railway with out of bounds left, they're very, very tough holes.
Yeah, the way you describe that second shot there makes it even more remarkable that he did it. And then his putting went, everything seemed to go into meltdown for him. I'm even actually looking here. Where did he finish up?
He finished tied for ninth.
Yeah, he did 76, actually.
It was a bad, bad round.
Yeah, 65 on the Saturday and a 76 on the Sunday. Hey, we should mention Eddie Pepperell, 67, who plays best with a hangover. Do you ever find that? Did you ever go out for drinks and felt a bit ropey the next day and played your best stuff?
No, I've only done that ever once, but I missed the cut and I drank half a bottle of Madeira wine, I think, and I was twisted.
But at least
I didn't have to play. Well, it was port, really, so it wasn't really wine.
Okay.
Half a bottle of port would knock anybody out.
Not the done thing, generally.
No, it's not. And especially that high up on a major tournament. Hmm. But look, Eddie Pepperell is Eddie Pepperell. He's an enigma to golf. He's exceptionally funny. He's exceptionally quirky. And golf needs somebody like that, to be honest with you. And it was lovely to share his honesty with everybody. You know, how down he was on Saturday after shooting the round he did. He thought he'd blown himself out of the tournament. You know, he had done so well the week prior. You know, he had plenty of money in the bank. He was, to be fair to him, he was thinking of winning. And it was not a great attitude, you know, to go Thursday, Friday. I'm in it with a chance. Saturday, I'm really, really disappointed. I'm heartbroken. and then all of a sudden Sunday he has a good round. I know one player who's played the Open, who played well, and said, you know, he was happy the way where he finished. And he didn't win the tournament, so why would he be happy?
Yeah. Probably Jordan Spieth, was it? We should talk about Rory then. So
That's the person I was talking
about. Okay, right, interesting. Yeah, he did say he left happy enough, yeah. Tied for second, along with Justin Rose, Kevin Kisner, Xander Schauffele. He had 29 puts on Friday, he had 26 puts on Saturday, and even on the Sunday, I know he missed one shortish one for par, which was a sickener, but he still came in with 28 puts. Now, I know that's not necessarily strokes gained putting, but hey, look, we throw it back in his face when he has 32 puts or 34 puts, so let's acknowledge the fact he had 26 puts in one round and 28 on the Sunday. It still has to go down as a good week for him, doesn't it?
I don't know, really, to be honest with you. He struck the ball well, excuse me, throughout the week. His wedge play is atrocious. His iron play is not much better. You know, when he gets it into the scoring clubs, he hits it to 25 feet. And no matter how good a putter you are, you know, when you're that far away, you're not going to win tournaments.
In what respect is his wedge play? So atrocious is a big word, say. So what are you seeing with his
wedge
play, Peter?
No, it is. No, it's probably not a big enough word, to be honest with you. But look where he finished on 18. Take, for example.
Yeah.
And he finished the same pretty spot as Justin Rose, Francesco Molinari, Tiger Woods. They all hit it stiff. And Rory has a 25-footer. And numerous other 14 the same, par 5. He drives it nearly 400 yards down the middle of the fairway, going into a flag that was accessible with a wedge, and he hits it to whatever, 30 feet. Okay, he held a 30-footer, and it was a great putt. But, you know, he has such an advantage over the golf course hitting wedge into that pin placement. You know, he should be into kind of 10, 12 feet there.
So when you talk about atrocious, do you mean compared to the player we thought he might be, that he could be Europe's greatest ever player, or do you mean compared to where he was 4 or 5 years ago in his career?
I personally think he should be Europe's greatest ever player. And to do that, he needs to take a leaf out of Dustin Johnson, I think. Dustin Johnson was a similar... before he became world number one, his wedge play was terrible. He couldn't hit a wedge inside 10 feet. He never hit anything stone dead. And he's worked tremendously hard on his wedge play. And we've seen it over the last couple of years, maybe the last 2 years, where he's hit his wedges in stiff. When he played Jordan Spieth in that playoff about a year ago, when he took it over the corner on the left-hand side of the water hazard and then hit it in stiff to win the tournament. That's what Rory needs. He needs to dial in his wedges big time.
It struck me, and to be fair, much greater golf minds than I, and I noticed the commentators saying it as well, but I had seen it as well. It really struck me, and then they commented on it, that they were watching Rory's wedge technique and they felt he was going in a lot more dead-armed. His hands were doing a lot less, and clearly they felt he had been working in that. There was less rotation of the hands going through the ball with his wedges. So the optimistic note might be that he has been working on it. He's trying to take his hands out of it a little bit. And maybe it'll just take a little bit of time, especially in tournament golf, for him to get that dialed in. But that could be just around the corner. Did you see that with his hands? Did you see a bit less going on with some of his wedge play?
I have to admit, no, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't see anything that stood out to me now, okay. I have to admit. But
grand.
No, I didn't see it. I just saw that he didn't seem to be able to be dialed in his wedges. His distance control was poor, and also his direction was poor.
And do you see anything with his technique?
I would have said that kind of thing, Joe, in my opinion, is practice.
Right.
It's to feel how far you want to hit it. And really how you do that is you go on the likes of TrackMan, are one of these monitoring devices that tells you how far you exactly hit the ball. TrackMan is probably the best. And you work at it. And you know exactly how far you hit each club. And, you know, a three-quarter wedge is, you know, Porik was probably one of the better ones at it. Himself and Ronan used to say, is it a full, is it three quarters, is it half, is it, you know, and they had it dialed into, you know, within a yard or two. And that's what you need to do.
So then I guess to round back on my first question, I asked, surely it's a good week, but I guess your sense is that, well, really, it's another week where McIlroy, if he was on song, if he was in top gear, it was there for him, and he wasn't, and therefore, how good a week can it be?
I'll give you I'll answer that question with a question. How bad does Croatia feel now, having finished second at the World Cup?
I think they feel okay.
Well, nothing was expected of them.
Okay, well, then maybe go to Germany for not qualifying for the world, for not qualifying for the knockout stages.
I think they feel really bad.
you know what I mean? It's a case of your expectation. It's about expectation, yes. And you know, if it was me going into the Open, and if I had Rory's game, I'd be expecting to win. You saw with Tiger Woods expected to win. And the hug that he gave his daughter when he finished there at the last, you could feel that he was drained. He was devastated that he didn't get this win. Now, maybe he feels more devastated because he knows that he has less chances to win majors now. Well, Rory has many, many more years to do it. But I'd still be pretty pissed off now, I have to admit.
Yeah, fair enough. Is one of the reasons we were just remarking, Nathan and I, earlier in the show, that God, we're on a real run of absolutely stunningly good Open Championships now. We reckoned, you know, you got to go back kind of 2011 territory to the last time. Like, that was Darren Clarke, so I guess we were excited about that.
2010 Westhazen.
2010 Westhazen.
Where Paul Casey went around having a laugh, yeah, having a chat.
But other than that, you're literally talking, we've now had about six or seven absolute doozy finishes in Opens and brilliant tournaments. Yeah. And you compare that with the US Open, and it hasn't quite been the same level of consistency. And I guess we were just wondering if that's down to the RNA understanding how to set up these tournaments, or if, frankly, you can just get a bit lucky in that respect.
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I don't think Carnoustie would have been set up as easy as it was if it hadn't have been for the weather.
Yeah.
You know, you would get back to, you know, lush grass and very heavy rough and people chopping it out sideways. The US Open is less kind of to chance. You know, they get decent weather all year round, so they can pretty much set up the golf course whichever way they want. Mm. But I think it's more a case of how good the players have got, where it's one shot or a bounce of a ball that kind of separates them. You know, there's no real dominance anymore. And when a couple of guys have a chance to win, they really go at it hammer and nails. And it's great to watch. It's great that there's no more dominance of golf anymore. And it's one or two or three or four or maybe 10 guys with a chance on the back nine. Mm.
It was obviously a pretty frustrating week for Shane Lowry. He's having this break from Dermot Byrne. His brother's going to caddy for him in America for the next few weeks as he tries to save his card and work his way back up the world rankings. You worked with Dermot Byrne. You've had plenty of experience with a lot of caddies out there. Sometimes is there just a natural end? They were together, 9 years?
Sometimes there's a natural end. Sometimes, you know what I mean? You think, you know, maybe life is rosier on the other side and you think, well, you know, maybe it'll give me a boost. Maybe I need to be more involved in my own game than with somebody telling me what to do the whole time. But Dermot was a great caddy. You know, Dermot took me from being, you know, average on tour to doing very well. And, you know, I remember him phoning me and saying, look, I've got this option to go with this young guy, Shane Lowry. Should I take it? And I said, Dermot, absolutely. I said that, you know, Shane is going to make you far more money than I can ever make you. And he did that. And he brought a lot of experience to Shane's game. And you know, to be honest with you, Shane owns Dermot a lot. You know, they won a world championship together, a world golf championship together. They should have won a US Open together. So really, I think it's a mutual split. And, you know, hopefully they both go on from strength to strength in this situation.
I think a lot of people are quite fascinated by the world of being a caddy. So in general terms now, like, job security doesn't seem to be too big a pro in that job. Not many people have it. If you're Dermot Byrne now, like, are you waiting for the phone to ring? How does it tend to work? Will people ask Shane for recommendations on the QT? Could it be as simple as like, oh, I seem to get chatting to Dermot on the putting green from time to time. We always seem to get on well when we're passing ships in the night or whatever. Or maybe you've played with Shane and you see him. Like, is there any kind of more common way than other that someone identifies a caddy that they want? Or is it just like the most random world imaginable?
No. There is criteria that everybody would have within a caddy. Some like caddies to do everything for them. Other like caddies just to, as they always say, put up and shut up and carry the bag. I was very much on, you know, caddy was very an integral part to my game. And I would have a little bit of OCD in relation to, I like things done a certain way. And, you know, it's very hard then to change caddies. Mm. But no doubt Dermot's phone has already rang.
Right.
He's already got a text message, I'd say, from one or two players who had been thinking about switching caddies and say, oh, Jesus, Dermot's available now. I'll ask him to caddy for me.
Yeah.
But like anything, there's very little job security being a caddy. And there's not too much job security being a player either. Like, Shane is going over to fight for his tour card in America. If he doesn't get it, he loses his card. Will he get an opportunity to play a couple of tournaments? Yes, he will. But he won't have the flexibility that he had with his PGA Tour card.
Yeah.
So there's very little security in golf unless you're really the top echelon. And Shane is just not quite up that top echelon just yet.
Mm. Hey, listen, thanks so much. Appreciate you taking the time. I know you're on the road and stuff, so much appreciated.
Yeah, he's been driving the entire time.
No. I stopped, actually. I just called into one of the golf courses who took out my product here. So I give it a plug. It's a golf course called New Forest. It's right beside Tyrrell's Pass, and it's a beautiful place and well worth a visit.
And now with your product, you can book your rounds there much easier.
Yeah, you can book online on bookgolf365.com.
Okay, very good. Nicely plugged, Peter. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, you know me.
Always selling.
Always selling.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, lads. Talk to you soon.
So good to have Peter Laurie on there. Any final thoughts? We've heard from Molinari in this pod. We've heard from Tiger Woods. Yeah. We've heard Peter Laurie's take on things.
Caddying is a fascinating profession. I was thinking about this last week with Rory. Obviously, Shane Lowry's getting a little bit of publicity about his, but caddy changes happen quite a bit. Mm. That random nature of it,
yeah,
in a sport and in sport in general, where these people, top 50 in the world, everything is judged and analysed to within an inch of its life, mm-hmm, that you just turn around to one of your mates or your brother, mm, and say, yeah, come caddy for me. That, yeah, it's so much based on feel, that it's not this, it doesn't seem to be any way of technically judging, well, I guess, someone's personality.
Mm. Did you read Paul Kimmage's piece at the weekend about caddies?
I didn't.
Yeah.
And I still have it.
It's good.
It's beside my bed.
So, I mean, the precarious nature of being a caddy. Dave McNeely is out there now. He's still out there on Wallace is the guy's second.
Matt Wallace.
Yeah.
Who's having a really good year.
So McNeely's 66 years old now. So he's the longest serving caddy on the European Tour. And the piece effectively opens with him in the Sunday Independent on Kimmage. I've caddied for 14 different major winning players. Like, you add up all my players, 14 majors, I was there for none of them. He's never won a major on the bag. He's worked with Harrington, he's worked with Faldo, he's worked with various others, and they've either gone on to win majors or had won majors, but never with McNeely on the bag. And he's just talking about how, you know, like, it's timing. Like, he was on Harrington's bag until maybe 2004 or so, and so Ronan Flood comes in, and I mean, good timing, Ronan Flood. And even Ronan actually was quite interested in talking about how there was a coolness when he arrived on tour that, well, look, you might be hanging out with, you know, you might be brothers-in-law or whatever the nepotism issue going on here is, but, like, that's not going to cut it out here, kid. So there was a frostiness for a while. He said McNeely, that was brilliant, came up to him straight away, said, look, right, best of luck with things. I literally just Googled it as you were talking there. Carl McGinty, July 19, 2004. Dubliner Padraig Harrington's explained for the first time the reasons behind his stunning decision to break up with caddy Dave McNeely. Before their split, the two men appeared to all the world as much in harmony as Simon and Garfunkel. I miss Carl McGinty. Just had a bit of fun writing. Yeah. So Harrington insists it had nothing to do with McNeely's performance on the golf course. He says, "It was before we got out there. I struggled with his preparation. Basically, Dave wanted to do too much. He was a fine caddy on the course, but he couldn't relax before we went out."
Interesting. That is interesting. Mm. I would have thought it would be the other way around.
Yeah. "I went for Dave initially because he's enthusiastic and right up there, but after more than 5 years, I need someone more relaxed, especially before rounds." Dave didn't trust himself. He was continually checking. He'd be running around, while I felt I needed somebody standing there and relaxed, so that when we were walking the golf course, we'd be focused together.
All right. It almost sounds like maybe they were too similar.
Maybe.
That he needed to be his yin to his yang.
How brilliant is golf that Harrington would just give such an open, honest answer like that? Like, you could see McNeely being quite offended by that, but, you know, that's just the brilliance of golf.
I'd never thought of the side of it from Ronan Flood's point of view of he's brought on because he is Harrington's brother-in-law.
Oh, that's what I'm seeing, yeah.
You don't spend, as Harrington's discussed before, some evenings they go for dinner, some evenings they don't. They have a 7 o'clock switch off where you stop being my caddy and
I can't ask you to do things anymore.
Yeah. But Harrington goes off, particularly in America, goes off into the clubhouse and Flood has to go back to the caddy shack and make his mates there.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure he has at this stage, but initially there was a sense of, well, this won't last, kid, and you're going to find out all about it. Mm. So I guess Alan Lowry's out there now for Shane. I mean, what do you make of that? Like, I think it's a risky one for Shane, given that he's 172 in the FedEx Series.
He needs
playing for his card here.
Looking at the gap, sorry to interrupt, but looking at the gap between him and where he needs to get to top 115, it's a huge wad of cash. It's about 300 grand. He's probably going to need a top five finish, minimum.
Yeah. And he's got about 4 weeks to do it. Like, Seamus Power is currently 119. Mm. Graham McDowell has work to do at 151. Larry, 172, has a lot of work to do. I mean, on the one hand, you've got instant rapport with someone, and so there's no awkwardness, there's no getting to know you stage, you can hit the ground running. On the flip side, maybe you want someone very experienced. Like, Alan's not going to know these courses. I guess Shane will, he's played a lot of them.
He's only played, I think, the Canadian once before and missed the cut. That's exactly my point of, I guess we're not talking about Shane Lowry ringing one of us up going, "Lads, fancy a month in America, be my caddy."
Yeah.
His brother is a scratch golfer, has won big amateur tournaments, much like Harry Diamond, probably very similar standard player to Harry Diamond.
Yeah.
They know the way around the golf course, they know the etiquette, they know all that side of it.
Yeah.
It is whether there's somebody out there, and as Peter said, people will be looking at Lowry's ex-caddy and thinking, "All right, I was thinking of making a change. He's available. I'll go there." That maybe Shane was or wasn't looking around the American tour going, "Well, if I needed a change, he's somebody I've been impressed by."
Yeah.
Somebody, just a different voice. But that's why it is surprising. If you were to pick up an elbow injury, if Rory McIlroy injures his knee, does he go, "Well, a mate of mine from school is a physio now, I'll go and see him"? Or does he go and see the best person in the world?
Yeah. I guess it's that slightly different thing where there is the intangible of chemistry and how you make each other feel and how you bounce off each other. Like, you don't need to like the best surgeon in the world. "Operate my knee, we don't need to talk." But you do need to like him if you're going to spend 5 hours playing golf together and all that stuff. So there is that point. I was at Carton House a couple of years back and last year, and they were practicing together, him and his brother Alan, having chipping contests and stuff. So I'd say Alan's very familiar with his game and what he can do. So yeah, best of luck to him. I mean, you really want Larry to wangle a good finish because he's so down on himself at the moment and he feels a bit miserable with it all. And, you know, it's not nice seeing anyone going through that. And then just from a selfish point of view, you want as many Irish golfers as possible on the PGA Tour that we can watch on a Sunday.
Absolutely. And we barely mentioned Seamus Power. We must try and get him on over the next few weeks. But results will be the judge of this. And if he had gone with your experienced American caddy, there probably wouldn't have been any questions asked. Whereas now, if it doesn't turn around over the next 4 weeks, and maybe then he answers another question for himself. Maybe his brother's personality and his caddy's personality are totally different and he realises he needs to change something of himself.
Yeah. Get Harrington to caddy for you.
Can you imagine?
It'd be amazing. And Harrington would do it as well.
Just poach Ronan Flood.
Yeah. I should mention before we go,
what about getting JP?
Yeah. The senior opens on at St Andrews. Mm, so cool.
First time.
So cool.
And they get a far better
Yeah.
far better field.
really good deal. Saw Tom Watson teeing off this morning. Bernhard Langer is the defending champion. Obviously, he's desperate to defend it, given that he wants to come to Royal Portrush, he said, because you get, obviously, your exemption for the following year's Open. So
there's got, obviously, a presumption that...
Who finished, by the way, 24th in Carnoustie.
I know.
Yeah. Langer's a genius. The Irish contingent, by the way, Eamon Darcy, Paul McGinley, Brennan McGovern, Des Smith's there, Ronan Rafferty's there as well.
McGinley, how's he playing?
Well, he missed the cut at the Irish Open. He was telling us his prep wasn't very good, maybe didn't practice enough. Obviously, would have had such a busy week last week. Now, maybe Brandel Chambly style, he was going up and down to St Andrews practicing across the Open. I got the impression he was really angry at himself for the way he prepped for the Irish Open. And I know we tried to get him on Monday night's show to review the Open, and he was practicing at St Andrews. So
I have a feeling, Joe.
He also knows that course. He didn't know Ballyliffin.
A feeling has suddenly struck me that I think he's going to play really well this week. I'd say he'll certainly start the tournament well. Maybe with a 6-under par round to be within one shot of the lead after the first round.
Has he?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Wow.
Wouldn't it be nice to get McGinley on the show on a Monday on senior winning Open a senior champion. Open rather than just talking about everyone else?
That's fantastic.
Kirk Triplett is leading on 7-under par, shot ahead of McGinley and Stephen Ames with Langer on 5-under.
I'll tell you what I want.
This is the seniors tour right now. Listen to these names who are just behind.
Can I just tell you what I want firstly on Sunday? I want last pairing, McGinley and Tom Watson.
His boyhood
hero. Watson out for revenge.
Oh.
McGinley out for a major.
McGinley goes, I was just watching that, I'm walking down 18, I was just watching that press conference from the Cup with Phil. That was incredible, wasn't it, Tom?
What was going through your mind? Oh, you're up, you're away, Tom, go.
McGinley was telling us the story when he first met Tom Watson. And the first time, first time playing in America.
Such a great story.
And going up to Tom Watson and saying, being nervous, going, oh, should I say hello? And then had the confidence to go up and said, can I go and play around with you?
He's told that part before. He hasn't told the part he told us. I'm going to let him tell that on air.
Yeah.
So it's class.
You have Bernhard Langer, David Toms on 5-under.
David Toms won the last major.
Philip Price, who played Ryder Cup. Jimenez, Kenny Perry, Tom Lehman, all on 4-under par. Tom Watson on 3-under par.
Come on, Tom.
Oh, that would be one of the great storylines.
I'm more likely to watch the Senior Open than...
Well, the Porsche European Open is on this week.
The Porsche European Open this week.
Bryson DeChambeau is the leader.
Is he?
6-under par.
Okay, that's all right.
So he's obviously hung around. There was who was around Dublin, did I hear this week? Chesson Hadley.
I thought you were going to say Steve Kerr.
No. Steve Kerr was also around Dublin this
week.
More
excited about Kerr.
More exciting, yeah. a friend of mine was getting very excited that Chesson Hadley, he reckoned he was walking behind him in Dunn's just across the road.
My God, Chesson Hadley in Dunn's.
I was thinking we should have brought him in. Chesson Hadley, where did it all go wrong, Chesson?
We're pretty much done.
Don't forget about our Carlo competition.
Yeah, don't forget the Carlo competition. And I would think, I was working on it all day today to get this thing done. Our Christy O'Connor Senior, well, he's just himself is the name. That's going to be out in the next week. Tops, definitely next 2 weeks.
Are you not saving it for a week where...
We don't show up.
We don't show up.
Yeah, but I just feel now we've recorded it such a long time ago, we actually should put it out. It's such a great day at Royal Dublin.
We should take pride in this, that we haven't been able to put it out because we keep showing up.
Yeah, it's the busiest part of the season, so I guess we should. So we're back next week. Hopefully Paul McGinley goes very well in the Senior Open. We'll get him on. So we'll talk to you next week. Good luck. All my exes wear Rolex, but I reside right here in Dardanelle. All picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.